This is PCJ Radio International.
Media Network Plus.
Well, hello, friends and listeners, and welcome to another edition of the program. Coming up today, we're going to be focusing our attention on RNTC, which stands for Radio Netherlands Training Center. We're going to be joined by Tony Wilkinson, who's been with RNTC for a number of years now, to talk about the fascinating work they do to help journalists and broadcasters around the world. Later on in the program, Dan Hensley will be here for this week's propagation forecast, so stay tuned. This is Media Network Plus. Now time to run our intro in reverse. But first, here's Paulette Macquarie with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
Closely followed by Wei Qishun's Cape No. 7 and Feng Xiaogang does The Assembly. They won 9 and 6 nominations respectively, and the three films will compete for the Best Picture Award.
That was Yan Yinan, co-host of China Radio International's China Drive. This week we were informed that on March 29th she committed suicide by jumping off her apartment building in Beijing. On April 2nd, CRI emailed staff and said, China Radio International is sad to announce the tragic passing of Yan Yinan after a struggle with an illness. However, insiders at CRI are disputing that she had an illness. Staff were warned that under no circumstances were they to talk about it in the media and post it on social media, or CRI management will take appropriate measures. This has brought back memories of a 2006 suicide where a man of Middle Eastern descent from CRI's Arabic service jumped off the roof of CRI in Beijing. His body was cremated just hours later. And the 2003 mysterious death of CRI's English announcer John Kennedy in Beijing. His body was also cremated without even an autopsy. Today, these incidents are once again fueling suspicions of Yan Yinan's death. U.S. President Barack Obama has nominated venture capitalist and former wireless and cable lobbyist Tom Wheeler to be the top U.S. media and telecommunications regulator. If approved by the Senate, Wheeler would become chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. This at a time when the agency is preparing for a major reshuffling of ownership of radio airwaves and is trying to catch up to rapidly changing technology. Wheeler currently chairs the FCC's Technology Advisory Council and invests in tech at Core Capital Partners. In the 1980s, he headed the National Cable Television Association. From 1992 to 2004, he was CEO of the wireless industry group CTIA. If anybody's wondering about Tom's qualifications, Tom is the only member of both the Cable Television and the Wireless Industry Hall of Fame, Obama said of Wheeler, who stood next to the president at the nomination announcement. Wheeler would succeed current FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski, who plans to leave for the Aspen Institute think tank in coming weeks. Commissioner Mignon Clyburn, a senior Democrat on the panel, will take over as acting chairwoman until the Senate confirms Genachowski's replacement. She will be the first woman ever to head up the FCC. May 3rd marks World Press Freedom Day. While we pause to honor those journalists who have been killed or imprisoned, it is important to realize the growing role media play in global politics and the changes that are redefining what it means to be a journalist. According to the International Press Institute, 133 journalists were killed in 2012, the deadliest year on record. This was 53 more than the preceding year. The Committee to Protect Journalists also reported that another 232 reporters or media workers were imprisoned. These statistics do not reflect the even greater numbers of bloggers and citizen journalists who risk their lives to shed light on life in closed societies. The top five countries with the most press freedom are Andorra, Luxembourg, Norway, Netherlands, and Finland at number one. The countries with the worst press freedom are Eritrea, North Korea, Turkmenistan, Syria, and Somalia. Canada, which was in 10th place in 2012, moved to 20th. The United States moved from 47th place to 30th, and Ukraine went from 116th place down to 126th. Facebook has lost 10 million users in the U.S., and it has seen no growth in monthly visitors in the U.K. over the past year. This according to data from market research firm Nielsen. Research shows that the number of unique visitors to the Facebook website from computers, smartphones, and tablets has fallen from 153 million in March of 2012 to 142 million in March of this year, having peaked at 158 million last August. The news came as Facebook announced its latest quarterly results, saying it had 1.11 billion monthly active users around the world, up 23% from a year ago. Mobile monthly active users were 751 million, up 54%. The data from Nielsen does not show the 70% growth in developing markets such as India and Brazil. Nearly 80% of Facebook users are based outside the United States. In Brazil, Facebook gained nearly 20 million new users in 2012, while India gained nearly 14 million. This is compared to the United States at 3.5 million and Canada at 92,380. For these and other media news stories, we invite you to visit the Kim Andrew Elliott blog. You can find a link to it at the bottom of our homepage, and that is at www.pcjmedia.com. That's it for News and Media this week. I'm Paulette Macquarie.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Many international broadcast organizations around the world have training courses. Deutsche Welle, BBC World Service, Voice of America, and some others as well. Even here at PCJ, we've offered some very simple radio production courses for countries in the Pacific. But one of the most well-known and most respected is RNTC. Now, I know that many of you right now have heard of Radio Netherlands Worldwide, or as they used to be known, Radio Nederland. RNTC, or Radio Netherlands Training Center, has been around for more than 40 years. We're now joined by Tony Wilkinson from RNTC. And Tony, I want to begin by asking you, how did it all begin over 40 years ago?
We go back actually a long way. We were established in 1968. As part of the idea really to support a lot of countries that were becoming independent, particularly in Africa, and they were setting up their own media organizations, and they needed skilled media people to work for those organizations. And that was the thinking behind the establishment of RNTC. And we started running courses from 1969 onwards. And initially, they were very much professional courses directed at giving people professional knowledge and skills to work in the media. And gradually, through the years, it became more, if you like, development-oriented in the sense that we wanted to make certain that the types of things they were doing in RNTC courses were relevant to topics, subjects, issues in their own countries. So rather than coming here and making stories about clogs and windmills, maybe it's better, for instance, to focus on issues that are important to you, which could be some of the themes that we now include, for instance, good governance, social conflict and cohesion. We've got courses devoted to water, for instance, the water issues. We've got courses devoted to international justice. As you may know, The Hague is the sort of center of international justice, The Hague in the Netherlands. So having a course which looks at the institutions of international justice and thinks about how journalists can cover issues to do with international justice, that's also very much part of what RNTC now does these days. But our basic commitment to people working in the media is the same. We're still focusing on journalists, on program makers, on managers within media organizations, and on people who are also training or educating people, either students who are going to work in the media sector or people who are already working in the media sector who need mid-career training and so forth. And we're still very much targeting that same group, but the content of our courses, of course, has changed over the years.
Now, of course, since RNTC started, there have been, of course, major developments in media, especially in the last 10 years, with the uprising of social media. Gone are the days that if a story was broadcast, you'd never hear it again. Today, sometimes the story's on social media before it's out by any major, you know, radio station or television station. So do you also have to today incorporate social media in this course?
Very much so. And of course, it's what makes my job tremendously exciting. I've been working for RNTC now since, basically 1990. So a long time, 20 years. And during that time, of course, we've seen fantastic changes in the media over the years. And it continues to remain, therefore, a very exciting and interesting profession that we're involved in. And of course, the arrival of social media, well, first of all, of course, internet, and gradually the increasing importance of social media, is very much part of what we now include in our courses. So that, for instance, our traditional broadcast journalism course, the second part of it, will very much focus also on multimedia journalism and on including social media in the mix. How can a journalist use social media, for instance, to do research, but also to interact more with your audience, and also to publicize much more what you're doing, to get reactions, even contributions to the content of what you're doing. So social media is very much part of the mix, always within the existing courses that we run, but also we have a couple of courses which are very much focused on social media. For instance, we have one called Mastering Social Media, which is entirely dedicated to what journalists can actually do with social media. And we have online journalism, which includes, of course, social media in that mix. So the number of courses which place an even greater emphasis on the involvement of social media in journalism, in media these days, and others which have it as a sort of module or part of it, or part of the mix when you're, for instance, working on course assignments, so that you include social media in the way you work.
Now, with the training center, I mean, you're getting journalists from so many different countries around the world. And, I mean, as you know as well as I do, and many other people as well, in some countries you have censorship issues. As I tell people, you know, there's two types of broadcasters. There's the public broadcaster, and then you have the state broadcaster, which is basically just says whatever information, whoever is in power at the time. When you have people, let's say, that come from this kind of environment, is it very challenging, let's say, to educate them on, okay, this is what you have to do? I mean, how do you deal with people, let's say, that come from, say, areas of the world where, you know, journalists are attacked, journalists are heavily censored?
I mean, it's obviously a big issue for many journalists working for media organizations around the world. What kind of freedom do they have? What kinds of censorship are they having to cope with? And as you rightfully say, in many countries, there are quite strict controls. Sometimes they're controls which somebody tells you what you can and cannot say. In other cases, it's more you have to feel that yourself, much more difficult situation to work in. I mean, our experience is that many of the journalists or program makers who will come to attend RNTC courses are very much aware of what their situation is. And it's not so much a question of saying you must do this, because often they know their own situation much better than we do. They also know the kinds of risks that are involved, for heaven's sake. And it's not easy for us then. We can sit here in the Netherlands and say comfortably, we feel you ought to be doing this. But if somebody is putting their life on the line, or the security of their friends and family on the line, then it's something that you have to bear in mind. So our approach is very much to say, well, these are ways in which you could work. Let's look at possibilities rather than telling you one way of working. And of course, I mean, Keith, don't forget, we're strictly speaking there probably about news and current affairs, where those kinds of issues impinge and really play a role. But a lot of the courses that we also offer have to do with, if you like, areas of program making or areas of media activity outside that narrow field of news and current affairs. And we can think of educational programming. We can think of drama. We can think of factual programming, so informative program, to do with health and things like this. So there are lots of areas of program making which are less vulnerable to the censor, and which can people actually get a room to do a lot more than they can do in the narrow news and current affairs field. And helping people think like that and do that is also very much part of what we're doing.
So from what I understand, it's sort of from the start to the finish process of a production, everything from script writing to sound editing or video editing, mixing. It really covers everything that's involved in a production then.
Yeah, we do. I mean, don't forget, we have, of course, different lengths of courses. I mean, the maximum length of a course is 12 weeks. So during 12 weeks, you can obviously cover a lot. You can do a lot. But we also have courses that are only a week. And of course, that's much more limited in terms of what you can achieve during that week. Our Follow the Money course, which is, for instance, coming up later this year from October the 12th to the 16th, targets broadcast managers. And it's very much about financial management. So it's thinking about how you handle the money that you have responsibly, and also how you look at the possibility of generating revenue for your organization. But that's only a week, so you can't cover the full range of stuff that you can in a 12-week course. So, you know, there are lots of differences depending on the course that that we're actually offering and the course that people are taking part in.
Now, the courses that RNTC has, who pays for them? I mean, is it the participants themselves who you know, pay for the course, or are there scholarships?
Well, we're trying to encourage more and more people to either pay their own way, to pay their participation, so come up and pay the course fee themselves, or to find a sponsor. It could be their own organization, or they might find another organization in their own country which is prepared to sponsor them. And that's something we're definitely trying to encourage. At the same time, we have a long tradition of a relationship with the Netherlands Fellowship Programs, which is a Dutch government scholarship program, which basically sponsors nationals of 62 countries spread out over Africa, Asia, former Eastern Europe, Latin America, the Caribbean. And they can then apply as a national of those countries for a scholarship which pays for their travel, it pays for their accommodation and meals while they're here, and it pays the course fee. The only thing that their employer has to do for the organization they're working for, the media organization they're working for, is continue to pay their salary. That's the contribution they make while they're here. And that is quite a favorable program. Of course, many more people apply for an NFP scholarship than scholarships are available, so it's competitive, but it does, in any case, make it possible for many people who couldn't otherwise pay an RNTC course fee or pay to come here to do so. And that's something, you know, we still continue to encourage people from those 62 countries to do. And many of those countries, of course, are not necessarily English-speaking countries. RNTC courses are English language courses, but many of them come from non-English speaking countries, but have sufficient English to be able to apply and take a course here.
You were just talking about the Follow the Money course, which is going to be on from the 12th to 16th of October this year. And you were saying it's about management. How do you deal with a situation? Because, you know, people, you know, I've spoken to radio managers in countries like Indonesia and Vietnam, where corruption is a big problem. I mean, how do you take, let's say, how does somebody take what they learn there and bring it back to their own country? But it's a completely different environment, especially when money is involved.
I think that comes really back to the point I was making earlier, that we're not in the business of telling people how they should work or imposing a particular framework. A lot of what we're doing is discussing possibilities, different ways of working, and different ways of working work in different ways for different people, if you see what I mean. So it's not a question of saying this is the way you should work. There is one way, the Radio Netherlands way, or, you know, the BBC way, or the Deutsche Welle way, or it happens to be. No, there are different ways of doing things depending upon the context in which you're working. And a lot of the value, too, of a course like Follow the Money and courses for broadcast management is actually meeting other broadcast managers from around the world and sharing their experience and their situations, your experience with them, and hearing about them. So a lot of the learning that takes place in these courses is not just from course leaders and guest lecturers to the participants, but also from the participants and amongst the participants themselves. So that's very valuable. And a problem like corruption, of course, I mean, you may come from an Asian country where that's the case, but it's interesting then to talk maybe to somebody from Nigeria where it's a problem and hear how they're dealing with it and how they're coping with it and what it implies. So that too is, you know, very much value added, I think.
Well, that's actually quite interesting, because it's almost in many ways that people are not just learning something on the course, but they're also connecting with people in the field. They're exchanging ideas, and, you know, because of the exchange of ideas, it may help them in their own situation.
Absolutely. And at creating a network, and that's what we find as well, of course, that after these courses, participants remain in contact with one another, and not only through the RNTC Facebook page, which we have, but of also, you know, independently from one another. They may be getting in contact to say, well, I've got this problem now. How are you dealing with that? So a lot of the value of the course is also in what happens afterwards and the network that people have gained. And also the sense, I think, particularly for broadcast managers, you know, good Lord, I thought I was alone with this problem. I thought it was only my problem. And now I'm hearing that, in fact, lots of other people have the same problem and they're trying to deal with it in their way. And that I think, is also very much about, you know, the value, if you like, of sharing experience and exchanging ideas with other people from your profession.
During the course of the year, how many courses does RNTC have?
Well, at a quick count, I think we're up to about 19 or 20 in total. I'm looking at, we now run sort of academic years, you know, so our academic year starts really in September and runs right the way through till August of the following year. And if we include also the summer school programs that we run for students with the University of Utrecht, you know, sort of very practical stuff like multimedia storytelling, smartphone reporting. We do a little week course on the magic of radio, which I'm sure you will be enthusiastic about, and probably some of your listeners, very important. Including those, we're probably up to about 19 or 20 courses in total now. And we're still expanding. We're still developing new courses. And part of what we want to encourage, and perhaps that's a message, please, also to your listeners, you know, if you have suggestions or ideas about courses which RNTC could run or could be developing and doing, you know, please get in touch and let us know. Please go to our website anyway, you know, www.rntc.nl, and have a look at the courses we offer. But if you have suggestions and ideas for courses that you feel we could include in our curriculum, in the courses that we offer, please do make those suggestions.
Now, at the moment, are the courses only in English, or are they also done in other languages? I mean, if we take, let's say, an area of the world where media is growing at a very fast rate, let's say China, would you, let's say, have courses in Chinese?
It's not an idea at the minute, Keith, but certainly thinking about courses in other languages is something we're doing at the minute. Traditionally, you're right in saying that our courses are basic English language courses. We ran right at the beginning of our existence in 1968, 69, we ran a couple of courses in French and found that that didn't really work. Partly because if you're sending people out on assignments while they're here in the Netherlands, it's tough to find enough people who can speak French. But gradually, as we're developing more courses which can be conducted either online or on the spot, or combinations of on the spot and here in the Netherlands, we're thinking about other languages that we could turn those courses into. And particularly at the minute, we're thinking, for instance, of Spanish, or we're thinking of Arabic as being possibilities. But certainly Chinese would definitely be a possibility. Radio Netherlands has Chinese journalists working for it at the moment as part of its new brief to promote free speech around the world. So I think definitely the potential for developing courses in other languages, including Chinese, is there. And I should say that there's something very important too, is that we do also have an option to offer tailor-made courses. So if a specific organization or a group of organizations in another country around the world says, well, we'd like you to design training specifically for us, or for a core group of journalists or program makers or managers or whatever, then of course we can look at the possibility of designing that course, tailoring it to their needs, but also maybe working it into the language that they would like it to be worked into.
Is RNTC funded from the same department as Radio Netherlands? I mean, last year Radio Netherlands suffered a massive cut and many people were laid off. What about RNTC?
Yeah, that's absolutely. No, we were always funded separately. In fact, we're both funded now. RNW is now also with us, being funded by the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs, or Development Corporation in our instance, if you like. So we are now, both our funding is sourced from The Hague, although there are different, funding, pots, we would say, pots of money in The Hague, which we're being paid for out of. And RNTC's future is guaranteed up till the end of next year, and the end of 2014. That funding is safe. But after 2014, we're very much going to be on our own. So we're going to have to And that's what we're working on and have been working on for the last couple of years, of course, is developing new courses and developing ways that we can in the future continue to work as RNTC and to pay our own way without depending upon funding from The Hague.
Tony Wilkinson, thank you for joining us today.
Keith, it was my pleasure. Thanks very much and all the best, and also to your listeners, wherever they may be.
And if you'd like to find out more information on the Follow the Money course, just go to www.rntc.nl. That's rntc.nl. It's going to be taking place between October 12th and 16th, and the deadline is September 1st. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Let's now turn our attention to propagation with our propagation editor, Dan Hensley.
A 10.7 centimeter flux of 140 on May 4th, 135 on May 5th, then from May 6th to May 7th, 130, then 125 from May 8th to May 10th. An A index of 5 stable all week long from May 4th to May 10th, and then a KP index stable at 2 all week long, also May 4th to May 10th. Sunspots 17, 30, and 33 are passing out of view this week, leaving 17, 28, 31, 32, and 34 in view. AR-1731 has a beta gamma magnetic field that harbors energy for M-class flares, while AR-1730 has a beta gamma delta magnetic field capable of unleashing even stronger X-class flares. The NOAA predicted a 5% chance of X-class flares on April 30th. Normally, X flares are common around the peak of the solar cycle, yet there has not been one single X-flare all year long. A solar wind from minor coronal hole on the sun's immediate north-northeast quadrant should have reached Earth on May 2nd.
All right, thanks, Dan. Just a quick program note for next week. We're going to be discussing the parliamentary hearing, the Senate parliamentary hearing that took place in the Canadian capital of Ottawa, looking into the cuts imposed to Radio Canada International. The cut was an 80% cut that happened last year. The president of the CBC and the director of Radio Canada International were summoned to the Senate hearing. And, well, we found a few interesting things. First, a lot of inaccuracies. We're going to be dissecting what they had to say and putting the record straight on a few counts. So that's going to be next week on the program. If you wish to contact us, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. If you wish to listen to this program again or catch past editions, go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. I'm going to leave you right now because I'm still recovering from this absolutely terrible cold. So on behalf of Paulette McQuarrie and Dan Hensley, this is Keith Powell wishing you well. We'll see you in 7 days' time. 73 and 88 to the ladies.
You can get it if you really want. Succeed at last. Yeah. Persecution, you must fear. We don't lose the battle, get to shield. You've got your mind set on a dream. You can get it, the heart of mercy now. You can get it if you really want. You can get it. See that now. Hotter, the battle is